So hi everybody, welcome to those in class and those of you online. So just as Deborah has said, we're doing the review of this topic, the spiritual teacher. Now we'll go about doing that in the normal way of taking refuge together, generating a mind of enlightenment, saying the prayers, and then engaging in the lesson itself. So please get comfortable in your seat. Ideally, your spine will be straight, your shoulders will be relaxed, and your hands and feet will be in comfortable positions. Now you can close your eyes completely or leave them partially open, whatever suits you. Now when you are comfortable, just allow your body to breathe itself. Now imagine that in the space in front of you appears Shakyamuni Buddha with his spiritual entourage of bodhisattvas, arhats, deities, dharma protectors. It's all surrounded by meditational deities and other fully enlightened Buddhas. Now you yourself are surrounded by all sentient beings. So imagine on the left your mother is sitting, on the right is your father. Behind you are your closest friends and family, and in front of you are people who've had misunderstandings and difficulties. Surrounding them are strangers. All of us are looking towards the Buddha and the spiritual entourage. So acknowledge that suffering has causes or origins, and these origins can be brought to an end using either method or wisdom. Think that you want to put all of the delusions to bed, so to speak. And you want to help everyone else do the same. So you want to help others rid themselves of the afflictions and in their absence have all the good qualities present. To accomplish this, that this is why you are going for refuge, going in the safe direction of the Buddha, his teachings and his community. And join me in saying, I go for refuge, since I am enlightened, to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge, since I am enlightened, to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. So in response to this prayer of ours, I think that lights and nectar stream forth from the heart of the enlightened beings. These wash over you and over all the people surrounding you. And they remove the obstacles to your spiritual practice, and they empower the potential of method and wisdom that you presently have. And depends upon this empowerment, you recollect the four immeasurable thoughts of love and compassion, joy and equanimity. And you decide to develop these yourself and then to establish all beings in those states. To affirm this, join me in saying, May all sentient beings have happiness and its causes. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and its causes. May all sentient beings never be separated from the happiness that is without suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from the bias of attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. And recollecting the field of merit above you. Prepare yourself to purify the mind and to accumulate merit and to increase it. So join me in saying, reverently I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions accumulated since beginning this time and rejoice in the merit of all ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cycle existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own and others' merits to the great in my heart. So now we prepare ourselves to offer the mandala with the understanding that this will provide resources throughout countless lives, counteracts greed and miserliness, along with the clinging that we have to our body, our conceptions of true existence, and our merit to truly exist. So recollecting emptiness, so that your body, speech, and mind have no true nature of their own. They're able to be transformed, but they reappear now as a pure land. And you say, this ground, anointed with perfume, stirring fires, the dawn of Mount Meru, four continents, Sarnia. I imagine this is the Buddha field of art. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. The younger, the mandala, come there to the Buddha accepts this offering and he smiles at you. You meet the gaze of the Buddha. And you feel accepted, at ease, and confident that what you're doing is going to bear good, positive results. And the emanation of the Buddha leaves his heart, moves through space and comes to bite above the crown of your head, facing in the same direction you are. The emanation begins to descend from down to the level of your heart, where it rests, and it begins to expand, and filling your body and mind with light. And the light pours out through the pores of your skin, filling the 10 directions of space and establishing every being within space to now be within the enlightened state. Within that empty space, you hear the sound of Shakyamuni Buddha's mantra, representing every stage of spiritual realization. And you begin to recite the mantra, hearing its sound and listening to it resounds in your body. Shataya Tara Mahasa 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 Tara And exercise under your breath a number of times. Now the lights will draw from the 10 directions of space and way into your heart. You feel the seat beneath you and the movement of the body as the process of inhalation and exhalation continues. You can hear different sounds. Accept the embodied state and acknowledge that this meditation is one of imagination, which has imprinted the mind, providing a condition for full awakening. So you rejoice in that and commit yourself to putting into place every other aspect of the path to bring about enlightenment for yourself and for all living beings. And then breathing in through your nostrils, exhale through your mouth, and move your body whichever way you'd like, move your legs, your hands, your shoulders, neck. Just get yourself comfortable in your seat. Okay, so let's review what we've covered. So we began by talking about the meaning of guru and lama, and then we went on to how we go about looking for and finding and then evaluating a teacher. We also looked at the qualities of the teachers and students. We looked at how we rely upon thought and action and the benefits of devotion. There are also disadvantages of wrongly devoting ourselves to a teacher. And then there's crises we'll meet. Probably one of the most difficult ones will be the passing away of the teacher. So we've looked at this, and in relationship to these topics, we have eight questions that answer the. So we've got eight questions and a couple of eight answers for the assessment questions. Now, to bring about this review, of course, I've relied upon these books. Now, primarily, I've looked upon spiritual teachers and the one right next to it called The Heart of the Path, the Stark Blue Book. And then the other two underneath relating to spiritual teachers, The Foundations of Buddhist Practice and Steps on the Path to Enlightenment. Now, if you look at those two books beneath it, The Foundations and Steps on the Path, everything was there in that from the lab room. Everything was covered there. Steps on the Path with quite a lot of detail, but very readable and very understandable. There's nothing difficult about any of those books. Okay, so let's have a look at our first question, which is how do you go about looking for a spiritual teacher? And then, of course, evaluating them. So first of all, for looking, but like I said, this material we've gone through, so when you have a look at it again in the slides, you probably go, oh, yeah, I remember that. Well, I hope so. Okay, so finding a teacher. The first thing is, if we find out about any type of teacher, try to examine their lineage. Find out, are they Kagyu, Galupa, Nyingma, Shakya, or are they coming from the Zen tradition or a forest tradition? So you look at that and then see what's the tradition, then what is the lineage? Who was their teacher? Then who was their teacher's teacher? And so forth. So this one here, this first part of the slide, is the lineage of the Kagyu tradition. So you see Gampopa right at the very end. His teacher, of course, was Milarepa. You look at Milarepa's teacher, well, his was Marpa. Before him, he was taught by Naropa. And Naropa, of course, came from Talopa, and Talopa came from Nagarjuna. A very interesting lineage. So when you hear these sort of names, you can also, when you hear this, you know, you can go into the library again or at home and put it into the AI and ask about the lineage. And then you could probably go online and then have to find some of their teachings. You know, okay, this seems to be, you know, the person that might be suitable for yourself. It also helps you so that when you go to teachings, like if it's the first teaching, it shouldn't be too much of a problem for you, right? You're already interested, you're there for your own reasons, you're listening. However, if you've already taken teachings from a number of different teachings, it's really useful to check up here. Because if you've been taking teachings primarily from the Galupa masters that all come here, right? And then you take a teaching from, say, a Shakya master or a Nyingma, they might say things to you that will shock you. And it's just because they're coming at it from a different perspective. Each lineage understands what they call the object of negation differently. So they all have these different ideas of emptiness, basically. So everything stems from that. Once you have emptiness, you have dependent arising. And the lineage is a dependent arising. All the teachings are dependent arisings. And sometimes these masters from different lineages, especially when it comes to the wisdom aspect, they're going to explain it differently to you. But I remember many years ago, a Shakya Lama came to Brisbane and was going to give a teaching on the Heart Sutra. So I thought, I'm going to go because I know it's going to be different. And I want to find if I can notice the difference. And I was able to, and it really made me wonder about why they're presenting it like that. So that I came back home to the centre and started going online to try and understand. There's a very different presentation of form as emptiness, emptiness as form, emptiness is not other than form. So I thought, why? Why is it different? And went out and sort of found out why. It'd be quite interesting when you do these sort of things. You know? Yeah, so it's important to try to examine the lineage. You're looking for an authentic teacher. If you go up there and you can't find the lineage, I'd suggest you back off right away. That's the first thing, examine the lineage. And then there, the personal history of the teacher's practice. So what happens, luckily for us, is most times when they come up to give a teaching on a text, they will tell you about it. They will say, I was taught this by such and such, right? And then they go back to the lineage. And my teacher was taught by this person. But again, when you hear it, that sort of should be sort of comforting to you. He's not just come there and read some books and made it up, did the best he could, and grabbed quotes from him and made something up. It's really nice hearing this thing about the history of the practice because you often find the teachers have taken the teaching that they're about to impart to you a number of times from different teachers. And you often see this in commentaries that His Holiness the Dalai Lama makes, you know. So you'll see him tell you who he got it from. And then as he's teaching, he'll talk about, but this teacher from such and such says this about it, whereas this one says that. So I love hearing that when the Dalai Lama teaches, right? You know, oh my God, the scholasticism of this guy, the knowledge is so vast. And so he's always trying to pick teachers who've got points that are really valuable to know that could help us. History of the practice. And then, of course, do they take care of their students? So being a lay person and a student is not is a little difficult, isn't it? Because, you know, like you say, if you've taken if you've taken a teacher, someone to be your teacher, and especially if they're Tibetan, and they don't actually reside in Australia, right? So they travel all over the world. Not so easy then. Nevertheless, you should if you take them and try and get in touch with them, try and find one of their students who's close to them. So you're a student of theirs, you'd like to ask a question. And you know, so sometimes your teacher might respond really quickly. Because one of the things I found out about Tibetan teachers, they love curiosity from Westerners. They really like this idea that we don't know, and they're quite willing to ask questions about it. In fact, I remember Khyentse Rinpoche said, we would much rather come and teach here because of the intelligence of Westerners and their willingness to question things. Where he finds that when he was in Tibet, everybody just naturally agrees with him because of who he is. Mm-hmm. Well, so just go along with it. Yeah, the Reverend Sisko, whatever you say. Yeah. So you do want somebody who will listen to you. You know, got good suggestions from you, this sort of thing. In fact, one of the ways I'm Khyentse Rinpoche taking care of me was when my first wife passed away, how he used to come up to the hospital and sit there and do heaps of practices for her and things like that. And she just, you know, I'd walk outside, go outside and just look up and just do all the mantras and doing the stuff at the bench and look up and smile. And you know, one of the lovely other things Khyentse Rinpoche said, he said, I think this is great humility on his part. So he was saying, I have no realizations whatsoever. But I assure you, I can promise you this, I have never broken any of my vows. You know, if you look through your own vows, you go, okay, she's done them. Up there, then there's all these others, there's heaps of them out. Okay, that's an this is a real ethical person. That's just the sort of person I want to be my teacher. Yeah, so they keep their promises, they live with integrity, and they have a clear sense of what's right and wrong. As you know, we went through, didn't we, the qualities of the teacher. So before committing yourself to a teacher, it's sort of wise to sort of observe them for a while. Especially when they're in their unguarded moments. So that's what you'll often see them when you go and they're sitting there with their students and talking and this sort of thing. In fact, I remember many times Khyentse Rinpoche used to come into the centre and he would, not many times, but he has done, he'd come there and then want to take us out to lunch. You know, if you're in a group with them, of course, we all want to pay for the lunch, you know, but what you often find is he's paid for it beforehand. And you can't do it. And if you do pay for it, like it's my time, look after you. That's really sweet. So he says, before committing, observe the teacher in unguarded moments when they're tired, stressed, or challenged, because character revealed under pressure is the truest qualification of the wall, isn't it? Yeah, so in terms of taking care of the students, they should be sort of like a kind parent. They want us, so remember here, you know, the idea behind a student, the relationship between a teacher and a student is in the end, the teacher's you need to be independent of the teacher, you need to become your own teacher. The teacher is just trying to help you get there. So in the end, you should be able to look after. As you know, the teacher has to have a Mahayana teacher, Mahayana Sutra teacher, needs to have 10 qualities, wouldn't they? Four of them to help the student. So what were the four qualities that the teacher requires to help the student? The acronym is SAIL. So they need to be skillful, thank you. Next one, to have abandoned discouragedness. What's for L? Oh, that's right. The motivation to teach has to be one of compassionate love. And lastly, the last quality, they need to be enthusiastic about what they do. And for themselves, so these are four qualities that they need for to relate to the student. But for themselves, we have the three higher trainings as the basis, isn't it? So what were the terms that they used for ethics, for instance? They had to be disciplined. That's right. And then what? They had to be serene. It's not about deep states of what do you call it? Deep states of concentration or calm abiding. We should be able to concentrate their mind. And finally, thoroughly pacified. Right. The pacified part, right? So they need to be thoroughly pacified, which basically means they need to be able to know like what's right and what's wrong, quite straightforward, simply. Now, then we know they need to know more than us. They've got a wealth of scriptural knowledge, and they've got the greatest knowledge about emptiness, don't they? And the emptiness here is the emptiness put forward by the middle way consequence point of view. It does not need to be a direct realization of emptiness, but it should be a correct conceptual understanding of what emptiness is. Now, it's very hard to find teachers like that. So Geshe Potwa, one of the great Kadampa masters, had this to say. He says, if the guru doesn't have all these qualities, he should at least have the following five. The realization of emptiness, compassion, greater understanding and qualities in the disciple, pure moral conduct, and no discouragement when teaching the disciples. So in our terms of the 10 that we put out, now they're saying five, right? Which is the first one in terms of the three higher trainings there? Yeah, good, Georgie, that's right. Pure moral conduct. Now, what else does this fellow need to have, this teacher?
Understanding.
Yeah, so then we might have the realization of emptiness there. Right, but that's a bit later on, isn't it, right? Because the other one was just, the first bit was being able to discern what's right. No, that's right, they've left those out. Right? So, you've got to have pure moral conduct, first of all. That's a
high training.
Yeah, that's right. There's only one of the three higher trainings put there. Then you've got realization of emptiness. And definitely have to have an understanding of emptiness and compassion, isn't it? Mm. So you've got three. They've got to know more than us. And yet they must not be discouraged when they're teaching us. So this quote draws a minimum standard for teachers. He says, even if a guru lacks the full 10 qualities that we talked about before, these five are non-negotiable. Hmm. Okay, so that's our teacher. What about ourselves? We also have a number of qualities.
Non-bias.
When I first taught, the qualities were given as three by Aryadeva. Then two more were added by Chandrakirti. So tell me the first three that were given by Aryadeva. You got the non-bias is the first one, right? What's the next one?
Intelligent.
Yeah, intelligible. That's right. What's the next one?
Great
diligence. Okay, Chris, I know you've got them all, so you can't answer the next one.
I know.
Okay, so what are the next two qualities that Chandrakirti had? The seat has to be respectful and
attentive.
That's right. Good. So respect for both the teacher and the teaching sort of opens the mind to receive the Dharma, since pride or arrogance will block that. But if you think you already know, what happens is that you don't listen, do you? And so in terms of attentiveness means taking the instructions to heart and putting them into practice. So not just hearing the words, but letting them sort of transform the mind. So let's So this is a very short section here. We just looked at sort of looking for the teacher. We've talked about the teacher and the qualities that they need. We listed five of them here. And then we looked at our own five qualities as a student. Let's do our first meditation. Again, just getting comfortable in your seat, dropping your shoulders, elongating the spine. Let your breath be natural, the body breathing itself. And with each exhale, just try to soften any tension that you might feel either in your face, your throat, chest, or any part of the body. So you're present and soft. So now set an altruistic motivation for this meditation. So briefly, wish to find a teacher and to devote ourselves properly to them so that we can go through all the stages of the path and attain enlightenment for the benefit of everyone else. So from the Galupa point of view, the guide, our spiritual teacher, the guru, the lama, this person embodies the whole path. So devotion to such a person means a careful discernment on our part and then stable trust. If the topic of guru devotion is misunderstood and we rush in without checking the lineage, where they've kept hold of the vows, how they've conducted themselves, or their readiness to teach, this risks turning Dharma into confusion and harm. A qualified relationship is like a training lab for the mind, where the teacher or mentor and the student follow tested protocols. So in this inner lab, what are you checking when you examine the guide's lineage, their practice, their care and integrity? What are you checking? Well, we're checking whether their methods reproduce the Buddha's results. Yeah, we're trying to align our devotion with a proven method, not charisma. So now, in your own time, recollect the 10 qualities of the student. Oh, sorry, of the teacher. And what are the 5 qualities of the ideal student? So when you recollect the 10 qualities of the teacher and the 5 qualities of the student, were there any feelings or resistances moving in the chest or throat? So if so, just notice these reactions. They're just information or data. So before the day ends, whereabouts in this ordinary life of ours can we practice these qualities of the ideal student? You can treat that moment as a trial and then apply the instructions of the ideal student and note what shifts in your mind. So may your application of guru devotion become a steady inner refuge guiding you towards enlightenment. And just breathing in through your nostrils. Exhale. Now there's a sutra called the Array of Storks Sutra. And in that sutra, they talk about 9 attitudes a student could adopt when they rely upon a teacher. And Lama Tsongkhapa groups these into 4 in the Lamrim Kongma. And the first 3 stand alone, and the 4th holds 6 sort of sub-images. So 5 qualities of the disciple as we went through, one of these here, remember? We meditated. Now we've got our 9 attitudes. So does anybody remember what the first attitude was?
A wise young child.
A wise young son, that's right, Ben, good one, on the track. And what was the second?
Vajra.
Oh, good on your ear there. What was the third?
Yes.
Fantastic. Okay. Now, I don't know if you remember the 4th one, but it was called carrying out responsibilities. And in that, we've got 6 things. So how about, George, you do the first one. What's the first one? So you've got the wise young son, he's holding the Vajra, he's on the earth. Great. Mountain. Deb, what's on the mountain? what's on the mountain?
Well, I'm
cheating. Well,
don't.
I'm cheating.
There's a dog.
No, the servant.
Yes.
The servant. There is a servant on the mountain, right?
Servant.
Servant. Servant. You remember a serpent, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Why can't you remember the servant? Okay, so who's the servant run into?
Sweeper.
Thank you, very good. And when the sweeper's sweeping, what does he sweep?
Rope,
very good. And who grabs the rope?
The dog.
And what does the dog do?
Right.
Thank you. You got them all. That's right. They're all ideas. So let's go back to the. So when we look at the mountain, this means to be like immovable mountain. Right? So the student is sort of unmoved by any difficulty that they have in relating to the teacher. In terms of the servant, they're doing humble tasks with joy. The sweeper, no pride. They place themselves lower than everyone and the teacher. What's the rope? What's the rope is to like carry the heavy loads. Like you wrap it around the thing and you carry it. Then how about the dog? What's the dog to remind us of?
Always happy. Yeah. Don't respond to anger with anger.
Yeah, good. So yeah, you're always happy and you do not respond to the teacher with anger. Just like dogs don't respond to their masters with anger. And finally, the boat or the raft, what is that similarly meant to remind us of?
We go
anywhere, we go backwards and forwards with joy. No resentment when we do this.
Up and down
New
Market Road,
carrying tennis. That's right. So if you ever get a chance to like relate closely to a teacher, you're going to find yourself This is really useful to remember this, these parts, because you might find yourself doing something or the teacher asking you, or perhaps Miffy might ask you to do something, like there's a big click coming up shortly, aren't it? So we will be required to help anybody that's here as a volunteer. You can adopt these attitudes then. Yep.
What does that rope mean?
You're prepared to carry any heavy load.
Is it like you bind yourself?
That's right. Yep. You bind yourself, you can look at it like that too. Oh, I'm very pleased with you all. Good ideas. You're remembering this.
Teacher is
happy. Okay, so now we can have a look at this next part too. Well, it's the following on. It's talking about how to cultivate appreciation and respect. And this is part of, you just can do that by adopting these attitudes.
Mm-hmm.
In brief, doing this, they produce joy within ourselves. We have an attitude of easygoingness. And of course, this prevents obstacles arising in the mind. So with this one here, recording the guru's kindness is the second major way of relying on the teacher in thought. It develops your faith into genuine sort of reverence. So the way they do this, talk about the four different ways of the kindness of the teacher. First of all, they say that the guru is kinder than all the Buddhas. Why say that? Because countless past Buddhas appeared and freed many beings, yet we were left out each time. We just lacked the karma to be guided. But our present guru has taken the human form that matches our level of mind, is the only one guiding us right now. That makes them, in terms of kindness, even kinder than Shakyamuni Buddha himself. Then is the guru's kindness in teaching Dharma. Past masters endured great hardships, even physical pain, just to receive a single verse of teaching. But we receive the full graduated path with ease, don't we? We just got to come here, sit down, and out they come. Love to that come down from Tenryuzen Institute or overseas. We're just very easy for us. And even just one word of Dharma can plant like a seed that will one day bring us to liberation. And this is a debt we can never fully repay. So I've probably told you a number of times already, and I'll do it again, but it made such an impact on me. Now, so before I came to the center, before I actually had a Buddhist teaching, I had done an analytical meditation. I didn't know that what I was doing actually, but it turned out I was doing a sort of meditation very much like you meditate on emptiness. So I did it on a chair. I was about 13. I did it on the chair. And of course, when you do this, the chair vanishes. Yeah, I got such a shock. Because it was like the chair went out of existence in my mind. That meant I went, it was like, it's the same as me then, isn't it? And so I thought, I don't exist. Which is quite weird, isn't it? Because you have to be able to think it. I couldn't put the two together. I couldn't get the idea of like everything vanishing, and yet here I am. So you know, what's the choice? So, you know, I could just, one choice I could make was like, gee, I just don't know. But I didn't. I took the option I discovered in my meditation. And so I became like a nihilist. And this is the great warning they give you at all these texts, because if you do that, you will not, you will lose your ethics. So that's exactly what happened with me. I did not, I would not do anything. Nothing matters. Because nothing exists. So this is all wrong, you know. And of course, I got myself in a lot of trouble thinking this and living like this. Then when I came to Lagmitakpa Center, first time Geshe Thich Nhat Hearing teaching on the Four Noble Truths. I don't know what he's talking about because I've never heard the Four Noble Truths explained in the way he's teaching it. Right? But then he came to the true paths and true cessations. And he started talking about it, and I went, that's what I did. You know, the course of this, and his explanation, of course, is emptiness means dependent arising, not nothing. So that, I tell you, I'm not kidding. I nearly leapt out of my seat and went, "Thank God, thank you, thank you." I could never put that together, and look at all the problems I caused for myself, all the trouble I got into. And that makes perfect sense. You know, it's the middle ground between ultimate existence and non-existence. It's just dependent existence. And it made perfect sense to me. Oh, this is the place for me. I thought that was the most difficult, gnarly question I've tried to answer. I could never do it for more than 20 years. It's 27 years by the time I got there. I've never answered it. That gave me the thing. And then, of course, you sit with that for a while. One of the great things that for me at least came out of it was, what's the most important dependent arising? So my answer to myself is kindness. Because if all things are empty of intrinsic nature, then how do we live in the world? What's the best way to live in the world? Now, from the Buddhists, I say compassion is the right response to this. They unite compassion and emptiness. But in my mind, it was like kindness. It was like the loving side of it. But you know, like you say, compassion can, you can have compassion as the basis, produces love, or you can have love as the basis, produce compassion. They're interchangeable like this. So then that gives you a whole way of relating in the world, right? It's sensible. Because you know, you can subject this to reasoning, and you always come and says, seems like a good idea. Yes, and I think back, like I didn't have a very good relationship with my parents, and yet in the Buddhist they go, it's your parents. All these objects, yes, there's your teacher and everything, and then the next one is your parents. So I sort of thought about it. I thought, if I'd never come here and never heard this, I'd still be stuck, and my parents would still be like way back there somewhere. But after you get it, you never got this unless you had parents brought you into the world. Even though that was the only thing they did, you got to hear this. And helps you get rid of a lot of confusion about how to live your life and everything. So the kindness of teaching Dharma is like it meant. So the other thing I think I've said to you before was, I had quite a bit of difficulty with this topic, Guru Devotion. Like, I really respected Kensa Rinpoche for his intelligence. But I knew myself, it was like there was no feeling of warmth towards him. It was appreciation, but nothing from the heart. It took quite a number of years for me to realize that there's something wrong with what I'm doing. And what it was, I didn't apply this. So in the Lam Rim, there's a whole section on this, thinking about the great kindness of your teacher. And so when I started to do that, then the relationship changed from my side. And so the great kindness of the teacher, and then the guru's kindness in blessing our mind stream. Well, that's what I would call happened to me. Your mind changes. That's wonderful. And then the guru's kindness through material gifts. So you often find, what happened? When my wife was unwell, when she was sick, she gave a present to Rinpoche. It was this teddy bear. So my wife really loved bears. So she gave him this bear. And no kidding, about, I don't know when it was when Geshe started going back to India to run the Tantra College there. This is like after 20 years or so of teachings at least. So then, I get this call. Geshe was moving out of CI, Tibet Institute, and going over to India to run the monastic Tantra College there. And so, Venerable Searing. She said, "Oh, Geshe has asked to come up to the house. She'd like to have a word with you." I'm going, "Oh gosh, what's this about?" So he comes down, I go up there, and he gives me this bear. And I'm looking at it going like, what's this for? We've got a course in like, many, many years ago, my partner at the time had given him this bear. And you know what he used to do with it? He'd wrap them in glad wrap so no dirt or dust would come on the gifts. Yeah, no, that's right. And then after all this time, I guess we'd like you to have this back. And like I couldn't remember, you know, that my partner had given the bear. Go, what's a bear for? That's right. Yeah, so get these, you know, interesting things that take place. Yeah, very, kind, you know, in many different ways, even just making offerings to us. And of course, the fact that we can make offerings to him is wonderful for us too, isn't it? Yeah, it's just the most meaningful thing that you can do with your life, isn't it? Really, if you think about it, you know, try to help someone get rid of every cause of suffering there is and have all of their good qualities fully developed and flourishing. I mean, who else supports us in trying to do that and encourages us to do it? Okay, so this first one here is kinder than the guru is kinder than all the Buddhas. And then they ramp it up a bit. They say they're even kinder than Shakyamuni Buddha. And yeah, they've got all these reasons. So here's some of these reasons. All past Buddhas did not guide us, and neither did Shakyamuni Buddha. But this teacher is now guiding us on the path, kindly teaching us the Dharma itself, kindly, like, you know, so blessing the mind stream. So one of the best ways of thinking about when the mind stream is blessed, your mind changes. That's what it means. If your mind changes from one position to a positive, you know, Dharma-influenced posture, this is the blessing. Now, one time, Timothy and I went to Geshe-la's house, and it was great. You know, so I went to, this is a bit, it's a bit, freaky is too heavy a word, but you know, it's a little, anxiety provoking as a student. And so, you know, you go there, I don't really know what to say, you know, you don't do chit chat and everything like this. So I was looking around, I saw the photos, and I thought, I'll get up and have a look at the photos. And then, so then, guests will tell me about like each photo when they were taken, what happened. And boy, talk about like encyclopedic memory, boy, oh boy. And then, you know, then he showed us the protection room they had, the house. But anyway, in the end, we go. You know? So we say goodbye. So what does he do? Walk us across the road and wait with us at the taxi stand. Yeah. When the taxi picks us up, then he goes home. Now look at this clock. Yeah, it's really gentle and always looking at the other person, you know. Ooh, really something. Yeah, that's not a big thing. It's not saying that, you know, look at me or anything like that. It just seems natural. Yeah. Okay, so let's do our next our meditation. Yeah, just drop your shoulders, elongate the spine. Place your hands and feet wherever they feel most comfortable. And let your body breathe itself. Just allow your biological system and your mental system to know that nothing else is required right now. So just altruistically think, may humility towards the teacher dissolve self-importance. And may any wisdom that arises relieve the suffering of others. Now in your imagination, so bring your teacher before you at eye level. So I think you're just looking right at them. Feel as if they're alive and present. And then with honesty, decide to examine your reliance on this teacher. And then sort of step into the attitude of being a wise child who trusts yet questions. So how might your relationship steer you towards ethics, bodhicitta, and the view? Feel a Vajra bond, it's inseparable, unbroken by doubt, criticism, or misunderstanding. Instead, the attitude of the earth, willing to take on tasks and responsibilities without complaint. And then we have these last six images. So just bring them to mind one after the other. There's the mountain, the servant, the sweeper, the rope, the dog, and the boat. So which attitudes do you embody now? You have an attitude like the wise child? Or is it the Vajra? Or is it like the earth? Or any of the other six? Now, are there attitudes there that you quietly avoid? If there are attitudes that you avoid, just notice any resistance to those attitudes. And if you can, just name it. So humility may be the very shape that wisdom is taking your mind. Just take a moment now to recall the kindness of the teacher. There are four forms of kindness. What can you recollect? So your teacher is kinder than all the Buddhas of the past. There's this kindness of giving you teachings, blessings whereby your mind changed, and there are material gifts. And just let your gratitude arise gently. And then dedicate the merit of this meditation. And breathing in through your nostrils, exhale through the mouth. Now, there are many benefits of finding a teacher and being able to devote themselves, being able to devote the self to them in an authentic manner. But of course, there are also pitfalls if you don't do it in the correct manner. So here we have four general benefits of guru devotion. But again, I remind you that there are many, many benefits, and there's lists of them and so forth in the Labrum Chenma. And these lists are explained in Geshe Sopa's book. The four general benefits of guru devotion are: you receive blessings. But like I said before, your mind is able to change by listening to these people talk to you. Then you are protected from delusion. Your merit is protected. And you are protected from delayed realizations. So we've talked about receiving blessings. Protection from delusion means protection from sort of negative influences. These could be mental phenomena. They most likely will be when you have teachings, but could also be that you're just still carrying on behaviors that aren't that good for your mental development. If you do find yourself in if you do end up in a strong, let's say, teacher-student relationship, if these teachers, and they know that, you know, you're in this relationship, expect them to call you out on your bad behavior. And please don't get too upset, because remember, you think this is, I need somebody like this. But probably most of you know, for most of our friends, they don't call us on our bad behavior. They just, they're friendly because they don't say anything about what we think. Like, oh, this is nice, no one's criticizing me. This won't happen here. If you put yourself into trouble in places, they'll say something. They don't want you to hurt yourself. It's as straightforward as that. They've taken a vow to help you, to help all sentient beings. If they see you causing suffering to yourself, which is the last one, protection from delayed realizations, you prevent delayed breakthroughs. Actually, by following a proven blueprint, you achieve realizations rather swiftly, rather than wandering through eons of trial and error. But that's the other thing I really do like about this path. It's not like it's a mystery. These people have been doing this for hundreds and hundreds of years and being able to develop their mind. It's, you know, it's recorded from teacher to student. That's what the lineage is about. So we're not like when I was 13, 14, trying to work this thing out and ask a question. So I went right off the deep end. Yeah, that doesn't have to happen. And of course, you get this delay. And my delay, of course, is lots more suffering. So one of the simplest ways of using this, so this is a nice way of, if you want to know what the benefits of something are and the faults of something are, one real easy way to do it is you get something like this and go, okay, so now the faults would be, I don't get any blessings. I am not protected from delusion. I don't create merit or I lose the merit. And I am not protected from delayed realization. And in fact, my realizations are delayed. That's a real simple way of doing these things. And this is what they sort of do here. This is, like I said, quite a simple way of doing it. Again, if you go into the text, there are lists of them, and it's up, if you like, go through them and find the ones that have the most powerful effect on you and go, okay, that's true. I know that myself, I'm holding on to that one, right? That's one I can get. Now I'll just add one more. It sounds really interesting, so I'll take that one and I'll go up and read up and study and go, oh, also, that's what that is. So there are at least two faults. And over time, just introduce them little bit at a time. You know, if your mind is not changing or gets frozen, you need to bring something new in. Well, they say, what makes the relationship improper or bad is often resentment from our side, resentment or pride. You know, we're hearing this, you don't know what I need to do. There's that sort of thing here. There's a major two, is sort of anger towards them. You don't like what you heard or what they did or something like that. Or you think you know better. You know, in other words, arrogance, being afflicted pride. So here are some of the, in fact, I've put up four, but in fact, these two lists have got eight of each side. I thought four is enough for us. So here are the eight disadvantages or shortcomings of incorrect devotion. If we criticize our guru, then we criticize all the Buddhas. It's first. Each moment of anger towards our guru destroys merit for eons equal in number to the moments of our anger. It will cause us to be reborn in the hells and suffer for the same number of eons. Then, even though we practice Tantra, we will not achieve the sublime realizations. If we practice Tantra with much hardship, it will be like going to hell. We will not generate any fresh knowledge or realizations, and our previous knowledge and realizations will degenerate. We will be afflicted, even in this life, by illness and other undesirable things. In future lives, we wander endlessly in the lower realms, and in all our future lives, we will lack virtuous friends. And so these have all come out of the book, The Heart of the Path, by Lama Zopa. Of course, each of them has a commentary, which is, you know, really good for us. We need to have just more than just a list, isn't it? You know, what's that list mean? Yeah, so in Buddhist teachings, guru devotion is a critical spiritual practice with profound consequences. So you see in the Gelugpa tradition, they put it right up front, first thing. And I used to think, like, this is great if you've got a whole lot of Buddhists already, right? But what if you don't? What if you're like us? Then this is not so, it's a great place to put it at the very beginning of the text. But when Lama Tsongkhapa wrote this, like, he was a monk, right? And he was teaching in the monasteries where you were all monks. So of course you need a teacher. He's a teacher, and any other teacher, you got all these little kiddies, you know. In other texts, you don't see this at the very first topic. Yeah? And in fact, some might start off with faith. Yeah? Then another starts off with Buddha nature. So again, I find it's very useful because perhaps, you know, for me, I'm not very keen to be told what to do. But look, the Buddha nature, well, that's something amazing to me. You know, and then you see this, and then you've kind of course, well, you know, along that, you're going to, the spiritual teacher's always in there as one of the major topics. It's just where it's put. So it just is for the disposition of the student, right? If it suits you, start at the beginning. If not, you might take something else, but you're going to end up considering it, thinking about it. Okay, this is the next meditation. Oh gosh, I'll give you a lot of meditations today. Okay, again, just get comfortable in your seat, settle your body in a stable posture. Let the body breathe itself. And set an altruistic motivation for this meditation. I think that by learning the advantages and disadvantages of guru devotion, may we be able to protect this relationship with an authentic teacher so that we can bring about the awakening of all beings. Again, you bring your teacher to mind. Try to see them as clearly as you can. Feel it there in your presence. And then examine your own reliance to them with honesty. So can you recollect the four benefits of correct devotion? First of all, there were blessings. Secondly, we were protected from delusions. Our merit was also protected. And we were protected from our realizations becoming delayed. Then what were the four benefits of correct devotion? We just looked at that, didn't we? These four benefits, it makes enlightenment possible. We also please all the Buddhas. We stabilize future access to teachers. And our karma is purified. So there are many benefits to rely upon a teacher correctly. Now, what about the dangers of resentment, contempt, or slander? Well, these types of behavior will damage your health, your joy, your realizations, and future guidance. In fact, they can lead to a lower rebirth. Imagine your relationship to the guru to be like the main power line into a city. If all the wiring is correct, you can light up the network of compassion and wisdom. But if it's faulty, you can burn down the whole network from within. But before this day ends, like later on in the evening, ask yourself, what single action could I take to strengthen my relationship with my teacher? What single action could we take to strengthen our relationship with the teacher? And try to let the answer be really simple and ethical. So by guarding our relationship with the teacher, may our life become a safe path for others. Now breathing in through nostrils, exhale through the mouth, let your eyes flutter open again. Now with you, take initiations at the highest yoga tantra with the teacher. There, the relationship changes, and it might seem that you have to do everything the teacher says. It seems like you have to obey everything they say. It might seem like that. And people have taken that to be the meaning of the relationship. And they've got themselves into horrible trouble because they've done so. So if we ask ourselves, is absolute obedience required? The answer is no. And how do you know? You check up. But first of all, just remember I said no. It might help. And he said no. Now we're going to see why. First thing you do is, this is what he's saying to me against the law. So if it is, you have to go, no, can't do it, sorry. Is what he's telling me to do, contrary to what I understand of Dharma itself or any vows I've taken? Again, you have to say, I'm very sorry, Rinpoche, or whoever the boss is. I can't do it for this reason. Yeah, so please don't stop turning up, because this does happen. People take a view, they see what a teacher does or says, they think that's wrong, then they don't come back. It's like that. Like if you have a relationship with them, of course you should come back and explain. What did you just say? Is this what I understand you to mean? Something like that, right? Of course, if you don't have the relationship, then you have this sort of, you know, I don't know, sense of pride or think, wow, that's really wrong. And you don't actually ask them why they said it. Yes, the people do and not come back. Asking this as a contrary to Dharma or to your vows is a good question. And then again, you might be thinking, yeah, what if it's just, you know, what we call a small negativity, what they're asking me to do? Well, you remember, right, negativities grow, they increase. And of course, they can be overcome. You know, negativities don't inherently exist. So we don't need to latch on to these things so tightly that we get ourselves in a mess. Right? Everything is malleable and workable. But that means we've got to work it, don't we? But it all exists in a workable fashion. So we don't need to think it's like frozen, like it's like the way you see it. It's like grasping the appearances to be true. And you do that, then you're reified, then you're into inherent existence time. You want to go there. Everything is open and fluid already. So why not play it that way? Like, for instance, if a small image, you say, well, Rinpoche, it just seems to me this is a little bit, it's a negative, it's very small, but is it? You ask them. I'm sure if it is, they're not going to say, yeah, go ahead and do it. They'd probably say, I'll do it myself. I don't know, it's up to them, but, you know, please don't be, they're on your side. It's, the teachers are on our side.
The good ones.
Yes. The ones that are
genuine.
Yeah.
The ones that have
got all these qualities. Well, yeah, we've been five of them, or the majority of them. But yeah, the thing is, you know, I ended up in this role. So one of the things that Rinpoche said to me, you always teach out of care for your students. That's why you're sitting here. Because we care for others. There you go. I can do that. I like that. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Any time that you get this sort of like, you know, your inner thing gives you that warning or like, what? You know, okay, now's your time to ask. Because something has just triggered our own internal warning systems that we've, they're quite useful. You know, but the thing is with these warning systems, they take everything as true. So that's why you've got to check. And this is a quote from Lama Tsongkhapa. He says, look, discuss the situation in an open and reasonable manner. Politely explain why you are unable to comply with the instruction. Then excuse yourself in soothing words. Now, nearly every time these teachers, you'll never get them to... They won't push you into doing something or force. It doesn't happen like that. There's a part that you have to play in it. You have to decide.
But isn't it interesting, Eddie, that Lama Tsongkhapa says this, and we're still talking about it as a contemporary issue?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, this is right. This quote shows how to handle a guru's advice that breaks the Dharma or is beyond your capacity. You do not blindly comply, but you do not refuse with anger either. Instead, speak calmly and openly. Explain your reasons and ask to be excused. The 50 verses says, if you cannot comply, explain why. This is in brief, if it is non-dharma, decline with respect, never with anger. He says, even the Buddha refused wrong advice, but very, with real great care. Of course, this is the thing about when he was, you know, I think this is before he became the Buddha. So that's the way of responding. So you check the teachings. Keep calm or keep gracious. Be gracious and say no. and again refer to the teachings rather than the person. And this is a really good one too for us with ordinary people. You know, when we talk about when people behave unskillfully, we often talk about the person, but it's behavior that's the upsetting thing. So that's the thing to talk about, not, you know, coming at the person. And I love that saying, you heard what I've said before, as he said, you know, the Buddha says, I've never seen a bad person. And I've seen bad behavior. You know, so that's what we're working against. Is, you know, sentient beings, they're fine, actually. If you're not capable of doing the action, politely explain why, and then always try to respond without irritation or anger. Which I find quite easy to do, because those, you know, these teachers are so, like, man, it's like, you know, it's really hard to be angry with somebody who's so intelligent and kind and everything. It's like, you know, and I always sort of feel like quite a bit beneath them. Now, so it's very difficult to be angry with somebody who seems more powerful than you. Okay, so now we have our, we've nearly at 8:30. Do you guys have anything you'd like to ask about this presentation? We only have, I think, 8 questions in this. So if you do this assessment examination, most of this will probably register, or at least I hope it will. Right? And if it doesn't, well, you've got access to your notes, you've got access to the thing. Yeah, it's quite right to say yes. Because again, but this is again, that's just like everything, the dependent arising. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you just run it through your mind, Ben. So you go, okay, so what's really important here is the understanding of what root guru means. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we know guru basically means heavy with good qualities. And the root is like what's the root of all these good qualities, isn't it? Where's all the good qualities coming from? Mm. So, like I said, there have been instances of prisoners in America who, I remember one story, who just saw the picture of Lama Yeshe and immediately something arose between him and this picture. So he reads, all of Lama Yeshe's work. And to him, like, Lama Yeshe is his guru. He is the person he relies upon. He relies upon the words of Lama Yeshe. And so he doesn't really actually need the physical manifestation of him. And this is the thing, this is the idea, you actually don't. Think of this. Imagine if you had to have that, then what happens when your Lama dies? Big problem. Yeah, that's right. Now you're like bereft, eh? You've got no refuge. Yeah, so just recollecting the person and, like, his writings, Ben, yeah, you have a really strong relationship. In fact, it might be a very good one, because, you know, like, they're gone, so you can't have resentment towards that person. There's a whole lot of things you can't do to the person anymore. The unskillful things, yes, good on.
Do you think there's some note of caution with that, though? Because if you're relying on, say, written word,
mm-hmm.
then there's a lot of your own interpretation perhaps being drawn from that. So it's not like a direct teaching necessarily.
No, you can't. But then, so you question it.
Yeah.
Now, yes, you can't ask Rinpoche, but that's not the thing. Lama Yeshe, yeah, you can't ask Lama Yeshe, but you can ask the other teachers in his lineage.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, right.
No, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you imagine this fellow who has this really strong relationship, like in jail, right? It's purely mental, isn't it, and heart. Right? And so he's a follower of the Dharma, then he gets out of jail. Well, if I was that fellow, I'd go, okay, where's the Dharma community? Well, where can I now actually get live teachings from? That's what I'd be doing. And yeah, you've still got the heart thing, but you still, you know, bring in the teachings. And of course, it may be just like, what is it? Little card humans and Pema Chodron, that similar type of thing. So yes, her lama passed away. He's a root guru, you still have the connection. And all those teachings again. So she kept that. But then about quite a few years went by and she was at some conference, walked out of her door, Ziga Kongfu Rinpoche walks out of his door, they see each other, boom, new connection. Then she goes, has a chat with, would you be my teacher? So now he's her guru. But of course, Kongfu Rinpoche hasn't vanished. He's still, you know, part of the root. And Ziga Rinpoche is now her root lama. So they say, can you have more than one? You go, yeah. It often starts, and again, when you read the text, often they give, like I said, different explanations of what the term root guru means. So one of the ones is that, like, if you take a highest yoga tantric initiation of any lama, that guru is your root guru, straight up. However, you may have a teacher from the sutra who's never given you a high yoga tantra thing, and you feel incredible affection for him and warmth. He's also your root guru. So the meaning is, again, dependent upon the, you know, a lot of different factors. Yeah, reconnection. In fact, that's what Alexander Berzin did, didn't he?
Oh.
Yeah, so his teacher passed away, and now his new teachers, new gurus, reincarnation of his previous teacher. You know, and it's quite interesting too when you have, when this, you know, read Berzin's writing about this, and it's just like a continuation. Like this guy behaves just like his first teacher did. Okay, so we're on 8:30. Let that go. So basically, here's all our questions done. So we just had these 8 assessment questions. Done. So I hope it's useful. What I really appreciate here is how much work you've put in. That you remember the 10 qualities of the teacher, the 5 of the student, the 9 similes. But this is really good because it's often the case that we as students come here and you know, you hear me or you hear Geshe-la. Next week you come back, you don't remember any of it. It's like, you know, so what's going to happen when you find yourself in difficulty, when you're all alone, you don't have anybody to talk to? What are you going to call upon? You know, you've got to be able to, like, you know, the Dharma is meant to hold you back from suffering. But if you don't recollect it, what's going to hold you back from suffering? The point of Dharma is that you hold it. That's if you can't remember, you're not holding it. Yeah. Right. So you want to try and take, you know, just, all I keep saying, take one thing. Decide to take one thing from each lesson. You know, if you keep coming back here, like every week, that's 52 weeks of the year, is it? You've got 50 things locked in there. You think about it, 10 years, it's 500. 500 things you know about Dharma that you can hold on to. Man, you're so much safer than some of the other people. Okay, well, I'll walk on another rant. We have to stop. Okay, next week. So does any writing by His Holiness or Lama Zopa Rinpoche? Or like your favorite teacher, whichever one. Try to memorize verse 1 of Foundation of All Good Qualities. Foundation of All Good Qualities is the kind and venerable guru. Correct devotion to them is the root of the path. By clearly seeing this and applying.
Great effort.
Bless me to rely upon him with.
Great respect.
Go, see it. Respect, quality of our student. Very good. Okay. When next one we come back together, we're starting off on our destiny. So again, like thank you for online. Thank you very much, especially you guys that are all here for doing the work and turning up each week. It's a great way of, I think, repaying Kinsa Rinpoche's kindness. Due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of a Guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the Supreme Jewel, Bodhicitta, not yet born, rise and grow. May that born have no decline but increase evermore. And as long as space remains, as long as sentient beings remain, may I too remain to dispel the sorrows of the world. Now the prayer for his glorious is long life. I think this year is going to be 91, isn't it?
Yeah.
The wish granting, wish fulfilling jewel, source of every single benefit and happiness in this world. To the incomparably kind teeth and guts I beseech. May all your holy wishes be spontaneously fulfilled. And lastly, for the quick discovery of Rupesh's reincarnation, the original, and safe return. In holding and spreading the Muni's precious and complete teachings through explanation and practice, you wore the armor of patience that is never discouraged. Incomparable, venerable Guru, you make this. Okay, enjoy our break that's coming up, and we'll see you all. We get back together.